This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Over the recent time, I've been focusing or introducing you to a new concept, a new metaphor of the blue sky and the white cloud, which I think very much enhances, I hope, clarifies what we're doing, and also probably putting a bit more focus on cultivating your insight faculty. It's always been there, but to create the environment of stillness and to be able to reflect and ponder on whatever depth in your life, on the cushion and in your daily life, so that you're always with yourself. You come back, if you come back and you ponder yourself, reflect upon yourself, you're coming back into the heart of who you are. You're not out there, you're in here. That's the nature of the Dharma. Whenever you ponder the Dharma, it's always taking you this way. If it takes you that way, then it's not the Dharma. The Dharma will always take you in. And it's in, as I was touching on this morning, that we need to get our journey, if you like, our journey is to come within ourselves, to find the natural stillness that we all have within ourselves. And it's in that place, as it were, is where the whole insightful journey takes place. It's where you get to know yourself. It's there that you find that you wake up to this mythical being that we've created for ourselves, that we've become hopelessly attached to and identified with, that it becomes so precious that we identify with it so much that we defend it at all costs. But that whole activity, that whole awareness around that is just fraught with so much dukkha, suffering, and unsatisfactoriness, simply because that very thing has no stability. It's not real. It's something that is desperately looking for to be affirmed as being real, but actually is something that when you look into it and you begin to get to know it, you begin to see that it's something that's in a permanent state of anxiety, because it's desperately wanting to be affirmed. I exist, and all the time it's shifting and moving and flowing. And actually, you know, the more you wake up to that, the more you begin to see the reality of the thing that you're caught by. And you can see that you can never win with it. Whatever you do in this life, you'll never win. It's always looking to be happy. It's always looking to be fulfilled, to find that satisfactoriness in life. always looking for that thing. I think what very often we call it happiness, which is such a loaded word, that even if by some chance you get a taste of that, it's very fleeting. It will never be solid and permanent, where you can just relax and say, right, I'm now happy. I've done it. I'm now happy for the rest of my life. It's something that you might touch, you might experience, and then you want to grab it and hold on to, oh, I want to stay happy, I want to stay content. Because the thing is, all the time it's moving, it's falling away from you. So you've just got to try and keep shoring it up. So even though you have that experience, there's anxiety with it, because you know that, well, you know from experience, it's not going to last very long. Something is going to come along and take it away, and so you can't win. Even if you get that taste, it's still not not really bound, not really grounded, not really rooted there, so that you can just relax. And the reason is because that whole experience is something transitory. There's nothing real about it. It's something that's always, it's not the real you. It's this mythical realm that we've created, that we identify with, that this is who I am. But the whole thing is very, very unstable. And the reason why it is unstable is because it's not real. It's not solid, it's not concrete, it's not sitting on the ground firm and just absolutely assured of itself. It's always in, and this is why this is called dukkha. It's one of the characteristics of life, that dukkha is with us all the time, in whatever degree. And that's the insight path. That we've completely, we can describe it in those terms, but we don't really know the reason why it's like that. We think that if we can settle it, if we just get hold of something else and do something else, then the thing will settle. And so we just keep running all the time. And then we die without ever without pulling it off. This thing that we chase the whole of our lives, and then it all falls away anyway in the end. And the whole path of insight, getting to know, is that you begin to understand this thing that you're caught up with, this person, this personality thing, that you're convinced who you are. You begin to see its reality, and that's the whole of the. That's what the path of insight's about. Now you can approach that awakening, because that's what it is. You're waking up to something that you thought was like this, but now you're waking up to what it really is. And that path of awakening happens on many, many different levels. Don't think it's something that you've got to be a fantastic meditator and get fantastic concentration and get into these sorts of meditation that take you deep, and you get down there and the whole thing falls to bits, and then you're awakened, and that's the end of the thing. And you think, well, there's no way I'm ever going to pull that one off. It's not like that. I mean, if that were the case, then this would be such an elitist journey, wouldn't it? It would be just for such a few people who have nurtured that ability for whatever, why they have that ability to be quiet and to be able to look and to see and to understand where that abilities come from, whether it's something that you do in, I think it's something that's nurtured over many, many, many lifetimes. And I can't prove that to you, and you can do with it whatever you like, but that's, and this is why we can often wonder, well, if so and so can pull it off, why can't I? Well, you know, we're all on a journey, and it's a journey that's stretches far beyond this life. But we have to deal with this life, and it's no good getting caught up with stuff like that. But to think that it's somehow the preserve of a very few people. Is to misunderstand it, because the whole for people to be able to look deeply, they've also have to have the ability to look on a more shallow level. In other words, take their awareness into their daily life and just observe and to see and to know. Just get to see yourself, and that can happen on many, many different depths of seeing and understanding. So this is something for not only is it something for 24 hours a day, but it's also something for everybody. Nobody's excluded from the path of insight. So then you're not a hopeless case. I can't do this, I'm no good. Look at him, oh, cool, what? All that samadhi and think, well, I'm never going to do that. And then you get disheartened, and you either walk away, or you just find yourself a nice little comfort zone somewhere and plonk yourself in it and then become a good Buddhist and then just sort of do all the right things, but never give up this quest to get to know who you really are, to get to burrow into it. Because once you get to know it, the nature is, because it's actually, it's there because you don't understand. It's not there because it has roots, deep roots, that it's made of concrete, that it's solid. It's there because you don't understand it's what it really is, what its nature is. So when you wake up to its nature, it will fall away. It will literally vanish. Literally vanish, actually. That's how real it is. The thing that we're all caught by. It will literally vanish. But before we get to that point, as it were, there is a whole... It's like peeling an onion. It's layer upon layer upon layer upon layer. And that's for all of us. And we are where we are. And our type of training is an insightful training. It's not a samatha one. We're not here just to bliss out, to go into samadhi and enjoy the bliss, and which you can do. There's plenty of opportunities of that in Buddhism, but we don't do that. We're here to get to know ourselves so that we can put an end to suffering. That's what this is about. And we're all on that path. Now, whether you can sit and be still and concentrate, or whether you can't, or you find it very difficult, makes no difference. You are where you are, and we all have to accept where we are, where we are. You're not going to be anywhere else. You are where you are. You accept that place, and that's like you're starting. That's where you launch yourself, as it were. So the whole insightful process is for all of us. And I was trying to touch on that this morning a little bit. And the characteristic of getting to know yourself is that you reflect inwards. You seek the stillness, you seek the center of who you are. You come back into yourself. And the way that you come back into yourself is that you don't chase after the world that you create with your thoughts and your imagination, your pictures. You don't, and you live out there. You see those, and you, with growing awareness, with growing awakening, you see, and you say, no, I'm not following those thoughts, those pictures. I'm going to turn myself around and come and find the stillness, which is within all of us. And we all have that stillness. That's not the preserve of people who are very mature with their practice. It is your natural condition. So each and every one of us, even if you can't, or you consider you're not a good meditator, you can't concentrate, you're all over the place. And that does not mean to say that you don't have stillness. In fact, you could say we all have exactly the same stillness. So that's equal for all of us, because that's your natural condition. That's our natural, our true nature. Our true nature is still. It's not caught. It's not agitated. And so we're always trying. We know this, even if it's intellectually, that we have to learn to come to find the heart of who we are. And from that place, then we can wake up to our lives, to who we are. And then when you wake up, you're no longer ignorant. You've got some degree of wisdom. When wisdom comes, you see something and you let it go. It fades away. It falls. Some stuff just fall away. Others fade. It depends how rooted these habits are that we've got. But that's the whole insightful sort of journey, and it's something that we all have to embark upon if we want to be free, because there's no other way of being free other than wake up to yourself and to let go of what you attach yourself to. That's where freedom is. It's not anywhere else. It isn't just in stillness or in all sorts of things that you can do when you're sitting on the cushion. And I've been trying to, I've just given that a bit more emphasis, although it's always been there. This is nothing new, but it's just an introducing you to the metaphor of the blue sky, which is your true nature, which is that lovely image of just spaciousness and emptiness, but warmth. It's not a dead image. It's something like the sky is warm and it gives life. And that's, I think, it's a pretty good parallel with it will do with how we really are just below the turbulence that most of us, well, that we all are familiar with. And that's our aspiration, to find the blue sky, to find the stillness. And when we're there, we can then begin to illuminate, begin to get to see this thing that we're caught by. And we see the agitation, we see this world that's got so much power and got so much seduction about, because we think it's real, and there's so much self-identity there, and it has so much control over us. And that's where the five pillars come in. We've not forgotten the five pillars here, or four pillars. The fifth pillar of recognizing your true nature is the blue sky, is the stillness. It's like the bridge. Otherwise we get shut off into this dualistic world, which we can so easily do and get lost in that, and just what we do just reinforce it. But there's within that there's if you like, there's like a doorway, there's an opening that's a bridge that we can begin to step over, begin to walk over, and to discover that part of us that's not a part of this. And that's the bridge of liberation. That's where our freedom is to be found. Our genuine freedom is that when we can recognize our true nature. And that's the fifth pillar. That's the one that's the pillar of liberation, if you like. But the other four is very much pointing at the characteristic of this thing that we think we are, that we're attached to, we are completely bound up with, that we can't shake off. With the greatest will in the world, we're not going to shake off. But what we can do is begin to wake up and see its characteristics and what we need to wake up to. And, you know, in the past I've always, I think an absolute, well, I think they're all equally important, but restlessness is such a massive one for us, especially us Western people. Because we got such busy lives, we don't have empty, simple lives. We have incredibly complicated lives. And we got so much to do and so much to achieve, so many responsibilities, that we are completely consumed by this agitation all the time. And yet our aspiration is to find that part of us that's still. I mean, it's the complete opposite end, isn't it? And that's why we need that, to me, that to wake up to our restlessness, to me is such a major path of understanding, and to actually not just recognize that. And a lot of us recognize our restlessness. It's quite a worldly concept. There's nothing esoteric about being of knowing restlessness. But if you know that restlessness is the very thing that's going to keep, or one of the major features that's going to keep you trapped in the self in samsara, then it takes on a different perspective. It's not just restlessness. It's something that we really, really got to address. And we need the discipline to begin to address that thing called restlessness, which is a habit, which is conditioning. We get on the treadmill and we can't get off it. And on that treadmill is where the self-identity is. And that's why we can't get off it. And then occasionally we can find the stillness and it can freak us out because we're not in control anymore. So we want to get back into busyness. So we get pulled back into it so that I feel secure, or at least I feel alive and looking for the security all the time. But it's one of the, you know, it's one of the pillars, and we mustn't forget the pillars, even though. And if you do read the new book, I don't know if I've got very not as much feedback as I thought that I might get. But what that does include, and that what makes this one different to the other ones that I've written, is that it incorporates it all. It incorporates the five pillars, but it also is the blue sky, and it's embracing the whole of and the whole insightful path. But it's also embracing the nature of samsara, which you can discover within the five pillars, within the four pillars of emotion and the agitation that we've got, and the self-identity, the body, and all of that, that will give you the characteristics of the samsaric world. And then, but with the new book is that it's embracing that understanding, that knowledge, but it's helping you to transcend, to find a refuge beyond that samsaric world, and touching on the paramitas, which again are they're the characteristics of our true nature, of our liberated nature, is to begin to recognize them, begin to use them, begin to play with, begin to somehow bring them into our lives. So it helps us to take that journey, as it were, across the bridge back into our true nature, into when we're free, when that's what happiness. I don't like the word happiness. Happiness to me is an emotional word, and it's a very misused word. And it's much prefer contentment, which is the middle way, where you're not pulled around, but where you have a buoyancy through all situations of your life. So you live your life and you're not pulled. Happiness to me is an emotion, which is great. I'm not knocking it, but it's very transitory and something to be very careful, not to be too sucked in by. And I think it's very unfortunate that it's very much a strong selling point with a lot in Buddhism these days. If you want to be happy, come and join my group and then do my practice and be happy. I don't like that any more than I like buy this new car and be happy, go to this lovely warm paradise island in the Pacific and be happy, go and buy this and buy that and be happy, you know, come and practice the Dharma and be happy. Hang on a minute. I don't know, maybe it's a good way of, be cynical, I suppose, it's a good way of getting interest, getting people. But I think it's emotional and it's transitory. Contentment is the middle way, and that's what you won't find the middle way in the world by following these adverts on TV. You won't find contentment, but it's contentment means that you're no longer caught by the self, you're no longer in that mode of grasping, of being caught up in that agitation and that neurotic desire, but letting it all go. And when you let it all go, you discover that part of you that's never been a part of all of that. And that bit there, yes, you can say it's happy, but it's far more than happy. It's not happy because it has something, it's happy because it doesn't have anything. That's why it's happy. It's not attaching, it's not chasing, but it's just within itself. And that's what we live out of, and that's, you know, if you want to call it a journey or a path, that's where this will take you if you get it right, if you put it in place. And that journey is very difficult, and we all know that. And that journey is just fraught with so many difficulties that we come up against so much within ourselves. I mean, this is not an intellectual thing, but that's where the emotions come in. we hit a lot of very, very difficult stuff within us, and we have to learn how to deal with these ingrained aspects of our the dark side, if you like. And we've all got the dark side, all of us. And if you do this, what we do, you're gonna come up against it sooner or later, because the nature of our particular training is that, you know, it is. Well, I'm not a very good salesman, actually. I could fluff it around a bit if you like, but actually we go straight to the difficult, because we don't go around things, but we open up to what we are. In a sense, we invite these aspects of ourselves to come and sit and be in front of us, and to be there, and then we experience it, which is very, very difficult. This is not an intellectual thing. This is emotional, with fear as being a major characteristic of that, and all the scenarios that fear creates, the sense of loneliness and the sense of isolation. But we are prepared, hopefully, to come to that place, or let that place come to us, and begin to open up to it and begin to see it for what it really is. Because unless you do, it will never leave you. You can push it away. This is what we do in the world. We push these things away. But we're only just... they will come back and come back and come back. We are preparing ourselves to address these deeper aspects of ourselves that pull us and diminish us, that create the fear and give us this sense of incompleteness and a dukkha. That's why we have Buddha Dhamma Sangha. We have to learn to put a framework in place. This is what's so crucial. This is not an intellectual thing, but learn to put a framework where we can bear with these experiences when they come up and do our best to stay with them, so that we can open up to them, get to see them, get to know them, get to reunite with that energy, to reunite with something that we've estranged ourselves from, that we've made into an enemy that possesses us and diminishes us, that actually is our friend, is who we truly are, who we really... actually, it's the Buddha. But we have to wake up to that, and we wake up to it by learning to open and embrace these experiences and not avoid them, but to stay with them, these fires, and learn not to throw fuel on them as we've done our whole lives, that just increases them, but learn to open and to be with them and see yourself. And that's not easy. That is incredibly difficult. In fact, we can only do it a bit at a time. These things are... These forces, this energy is far, far greater than we could ever tackle. But learn to skillfully open and make friends by learning to not fuel the fire, but learn to come together so that we reunite with ourselves. What is ourselves? And we have that opportunity in this. It's a fantastic opportunity, even if it's so, so difficult. But we have the opportunity of putting something to rest that's possessed us, that we've become its victim. This life, however many lives, who knows? We have the opportunity to reunite and to become whole again, if we are prepared to stay with it. But it's very difficult. And I know, you know, it's so easy to get negative. It's so easy to get washed away by these things. But always, always, always do your best, and that's all you can ever do. And then if you've got to somehow relieve the experience, then okay. But always, always stay with it as much as you can. Stay with it, and then when you absolutely can't stay with it any longer, just take one more step. And then, okay, then it's likely to go into change anyway and go away and come back again, but whenever these things come back, so that you're prepared to stay with, to open, to embrace. And it is possible, you can do it, and it's not easy. You've got Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. You've got like-minded people around you. So important. You're not going to do this on your own. It's too big. But you've got like-minded people that will give you that emotion, even if you never speak to them. Speak to them. Even if you don't say anything. But you just get that sense that you're not alone, that others are going through the same thing. It's massive. It is absolutely, and I know this from my own experience, that you can just stay with these things that little bit longer, that you could never do on your own. That's why being with Sangha and connecting with Sangha is so. Well, it's not an option if you want to do this. It's not an option. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha is not an option. There are lots of options in Buddhism. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha is not, and there isn't a tradition that does say they all unite. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, the refuges, the three jewels. And they're not doing that just out of fun or trying to create an identity for themselves. It's there because it's vital if you want to go beyond suffering. It's vital because these are the supports, the wisdom that allows you to bear with and to stay with your stuff so that it goes into change. And that's at times immensely challenging for us, all of us. And this is where commitment is so important, that you just do your damnedest, you know. And I know from, you know, I do touch upon my own experiences from time to time, and I do know, you know, for me this has not been an easy journey, I can assure you. I mean, I've been to some very, very difficult places with this. And been prepared. I don't know why at times when I sort of why did you stick it out? Why didn't you sort of, you know, well, run away from it or back away from it or whatever? But generally I've stayed with these things, and it's reduced me to a heaps before now. But I've not given in. And in hindsight, you can see that there you are. That's why you're going to stick with it. You're going to stick with it. You're not going to run away from it. You're going to stick with it. And when you stick with it, and you do genuinely stay with it, the law of impermanence shows itself sooner or later if you stay with these things. But whatever it is that you're going through will change. It will change. But you got to stay with it. And that is the great challenge, I believe. And it's not something our culture encourages us to do. Our culture doesn't encourage us to stay with at all. Our culture actually encourages us the complete opposite. If you don't like it, chuck it away. Go and get another thing, whatever it is. We've all got money in our pockets. We can buy our way out of dukkha, of things that we don't like. And that's the way of the world. So that we're always avoiding ourselves, because that's what it is. So that we don't like what we're experiencing. We don't like that experience of ourselves. So we buy ourselves out of it. We skirt around it. But if you want the change, and we all want it, we all want liberation, we all want awakening, we all want to be free, however you dress it up, we may not use those words, but you want to be light and free. it's having that commitment to sit these things through is the key, is what's going to do it. And it's it will take you to the edge. But if you've got Buddha Dhamma Sangha, it gives you that, it makes it possible. On your own, it won't happen. Okay, you are, it won't happen. That you do your best, and even when you do your best, you sometimes got to back off. But then don't make a problem, then say, oh, no good, I can't do it. Just know that you've done your best, and that when the thing comes round again, because it will come round again, whatever it is, the pictures, the experiences will come round again. See if you can see it through, just stay with it. Really challenge the law of impermanence. If I stick with this long enough, what's going to happen to this? Is it going to stay with me forever? Or if I stay with it, would it? And by staying with it, you're disempowering something that has immense power, that you've fed, that you've empowered. Now you're disempowering it. And the way you disempower it is that you don't do anything. There isn't anything for you to do but stay with. Leave it alone, stay with. Say yes to it. That's the nature of our training. And it's emotional. It is absolutely emotional. This is not intellectual, emotional. And do your best. And it's not easy, but this is very much the fast track. This is the quick way. If you want a more sedate journey, there's plenty out there. But this is the nature of this one, is that we do absolutely. It takes us up against ourselves head on. We don't have lots of things to get lost in, to distract us, to divert us. We go straight to the heart of the matter, and it's for us then. It's for us then to through commitment, through our own growing inner strength, which is what commitment will give you. Bearing with will give you inner strength, so that when it comes round again, you can stay with something that you've never really ever stayed with before, that you've fed actually, that you've empowered. Now you're disempowering it, so that it diminishes. It diminishes, and in time, it will not possess you. It will not dictate your life. It will not diminish you, so that you only live a little fraction of yourself, so that you only, I can only do this and I can only do that. And then you become open, fearless. You can go anywhere and do anything. Because that fear is your creation. Those things that diminish you, that make you a small person in this life, those things that make you small are not out there, they're in here. And you wake up to that and you see that you are diminishing. It's not your mother and your father and your this and your that. That's what you've been taught to do. That's the part of the delusion, or the ignorance of knowing how this is out there. You own that. I am the creator. And when you accept that you are the creator, you can uncreate. And you uncreate by not feeding, by not empowering it, but leaving it alone, saying yes. And realizing that demon, that darkness, that demon, is you. It is not out there coming to get you. But it's you, you've estranged, you've cut yourself in half, you've cut a big chunk of yourself off. And then you become frightened of yourself. You're not, that demon is not, you're frightened of what you've created. Now you're going to make friends. It's the Dharma. It's not an easy journey, but it's the thing that will cure everything. It will cure you, and you become open and free. Then you can live your life, whatever. Go wherever you need to go, do whatever you need to do without fear. And how your life can open up, and how you can really begin to taste what we are in the midst of. We spend our life in fear, and yet we're in paradise. We're in this great mystery of something that you will never be your possession, and you will never understand. But what you can is become a part of it, so that you become it. then you see your full potential. What you really are beyond this thing that we create that imprisons us. Beyond that was something quite remarkable. Not only remarkable of just having the experience of what reality really is, but how there is such warmth and love and compassion within that experience that then can flow and help with the suffering of the world. But first you have to relieve yourself of your own fear, of your own suffering, in order for it to really fulfill itself. And it's commitment. And that, you know, we can all do it. I don't believe that this is the preserve of the few. That would mean that the Dharma is unfair, that it picks and chooses, that I'll have you, you know. And it's not. It's open to all of us. We all have that as humans, with self-awareness, with that ability to change. That ability to change our path of habits. We have that ability. We can change. Other animals can't do that. We can do that. We all have that potential. That's what makes us unique. And we all have it within us. And so whoever you think you are, whatever, don't diminish yourself by being negative towards yourself. By thinking that you can't pull it off, that you can't do what we're doing. You can, but you have to be committed. You have to be prepared to stay with until things go into change. And I was touching on that this morning, I think, about finding that place of stillness within us, that even if we only touch for a few seconds, don't think that it's not a big thing, because it is a big thing. There's not many creatures that can wake up to themselves in that way, to see and begin to get to know themselves, even if it's only for a short time. Don't think that that's not good enough. That there, just that spark, if you like, that spark of awareness, that spark of beginning to see yourself, whether it's for a second or a few seconds or a few minutes there, that there, believe me, I absolutely believe this, is beginning to absolutely undermine those roots of this thing that we call samsara, that we're caught by. It's beginning to rock them. It's beginning to starve them, beginning to show them that the game is up. The game is that you're waking up to what you've put in place. And with that, you know, stay with it, and come back and find that place of stillness within you, even if it's for a few seconds. Is something huge. It is not a small thing, it is a huge thing. Because from there, those are the seeds of change. That's where things change, by coming and discovering what is your inner nature, by turning the whole lifetime of going out there, by turning the whole thing around and coming back and finding that place of stillness, of spaciousness. There. That's where everything, the whole samsaric world, begins to go into change. So I just don't give up. That's what I'm saying. We get knocked around by this all the time. All of us, including me, get knocked around by it. But don't give up. Even if you have to go away and take a few deep breaths, don't give up. Come back, because you know you've embarked upon yourself on something quite amazing, something that's so rare in this world, so rare in the human. It doesn't exist in the other animals. Yeah, but even in the human realm, it's so rare that you've launched yourself on this journey of self-discovery. That's so rare, because most people don't even begin, never mind being able to do it, they don't even start it. They're so caught up chasing out there. But the very fact that you turn and you reflect and you begin to embark upon that journey is so massive. Don't give it up. Nurture it. Feed it. Just bear with it. All the forces that are saying, no, 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 I'm the boss, I'm in charge, you're not going to do this. Just don't get in conflict with that, but just say, no, there's another part of me that I'm just beginning to get an inkling about, beginning to see it there. That's my refuge. That's where I want to go. That's where I want to be. Don't want to be there. This is where I want to be. And there's forces. Come on, come with me. You must come and play my games. You must be a part of. You say no. And the more that you can find that place of stillness within you, the more through your awareness to come there, you're beginning to discover that place of refuge, that place of liberation. But it's commitment. Commitment, the C word that defeats so many of us. So many of us Buddhists. We've got commitment until we hit the buffers, and then our commitment turns into a comfort zone, because we can't hack it. We don't want to go there. We don't like what we see. So we retreat into some nice little cozy place, which is okay, but there's no liberation there. Come back to it and come back to it with your commitment. So at least you're chipping away at something that you've been a slave to for so long. You've come that far. You've done that much. And that in itself, as I say, is even incredibly rare, even to do. In it, how useless you may think you are with this. You have done something that most of humanity have not even begun to get to, never mind launch themselves. Don't, now you've made the step, don't turn around and you've done something very big. But it's that commitment, and when you find it difficult, stay with it, stay with it, stay with it, stay with it. And then things change.